The following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com.
Hey guys, Chris here, and I wanted to let you know that this episode of The Underdog is brought to you by our good friends at Skybook Sportsbook. Definitely our favorite place to make bets. If you're looking to place a bet, we encourage you to do it at Skybook Sportsbook. Visit them at skybook.ag. And now, let's get to this episode of The Underdog.
We might be underdog sports, but we came here to win. The most legit podcast, that's why we know you're tuning in. We cover the biggest news, we underdogs, but we can't lose. So trust the process, yes you, cause we got Chris and Anshu to bless you. With the best features, best stories, we diving deep like a Lambo leap. Wake up kid and stop snoring, we on point just like this beat. Bring the passion like the dog pound, in the cold, get a gold brown. Sit back and raise the cap, cause we start this show like right now.
Welcome to The Underdog, episode number 79. I'm Chris Horvidell, joined by Anshu Khanna. Anshu, NBA, free agency 2018, well into this now. Things are crazy, at minimum. They're crazy. I would have never anticipated some of the things that have happened. We're going to go through, talk about everything. But first, my friend, how are you?
I am doing well, not as well as probably Steph Curry and various members of the Warriors, but I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
I can't complain. I'm excited. I'm excited to see what happens next. We're going to get into it, but the 76ers made a franchise-altering trade today. Many, many, many exciting moves around the NBA. Let's try and get this sort of chronologically, though, because it is a lot to tackle. Let's start with the re-signings. Paul George, Kevin Durant, Chris Paul, J.J. Redick, Avery Bradley, Derek Favors, Aaron Gordon, Will Barton, Fred Van Vliet, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Rudy Gay, Joe Harris, Dirk Nowitzki, Aaron Baines, and Jeremy Grant all re-signed with their previous teams. Of those names I rattled off, which are the most interesting to you? Which are the most surprising to you?
Well, I think the most interesting, I don't know if it's surprising, but it has to be Paul George. I think you had pegged Paul George's chances of leaving at somewhere around 75%, which
higher.
I think that probably higher. And I mean,
yeah.
And when it became clear that LeBron was likely headed to LA, you know, it became something where I thought that Paul George was naturally going to slot in with him. But kudos to Paul George, honestly, in this, what we've seen here in the last week and really in the last 2 years. I just give him so much credit. I give Oklahoma City so much credit, something they badly needed to happen. And for that reason, I call it extremely interesting, you know, that he decides to stay. And kudos. I mean, I think it's an awesome move. I don't know that Oklahoma City is ever going to be in position to win a title here with this particular core. But, you know, I really appreciate that he's staying there, and hopefully they build on what they've got.
Well, it's time for OKC and Cleveland to come together with this trade we've been talking about for months.
Yes.
Now. Let's get Kevin Love to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and I still don't know where that leaves them, but I think it gets them certainly closer.
Well, yeah, there is a elephant in the room in that Western Conference, but you obviously want to compete. Like, they're spending a lot of money already. The goal is to be as good as possible. And I think Kevin Love makes them a better team.
I agree, but they've got they signed Nerlens Noel the other day, right?
Yes.
So now they have
Nerlens Noel signed a 2-year contract at the minimum. He is not blocking anyone.
Was it really the minimum? Jeez.
Yeah, player option for the
second.
He turned down like $70 million. No, $70 million.
Yeah, 70? Okay. Well, I'm sure he doesn't want to hear that, but yeah. You're right. It wouldn't really be a factor. And, it'd be interesting to see Love, because Love is really kind of the modern age big in terms of the way the game's going. So, you know, you kind of hope that you get a guy like Love in your front court. And I think that he would fit nicely. Obviously, former teammates with Westbrook.
Right.
Probably played on many All-Star teams with Paul George. I'm sure they know each other. So, you know, I think that fits really nicely. And then just from a, you know, like a team chemistry standpoint, I like that fit. But what we've heard is that the Cavs do not want to trade Love. So whether that's for leverage reasons or what, you know, it doesn't make sense for them to keep him.
I feel like we've seen it both ways, because yesterday I was under – I thought I read that they are willing to trade Love in the right deal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they should be my guess is whatever stuff I've seen about them not trying to trade him is merely leverage play, because at this point there's just no reason for Kevin Love to be a Cleveland Cavalier.
Agreed. None whatsoever. You got to get him out of there. You got to start getting assets. Enjoy the Colin Sexton, Chetty Osman. Oh, God, I don't know who else is in that starting lineup. Well, I guess
probably
Tristan,
Larry
Tristan's
Nance.
There. Larry Nance, Tristan. Boy, that's a contender for an R.J. Barrett type.
Very. Oh, yeah, no doubt. It could be a very quick turnaround for Cleveland with that history of number one picks.
That's true. You wonder how much of their luck is already exhausted getting three of four consecutive number one picks, even if one of those was Anthony Bennett.
Yeah, but when two of them are Kyrie Irving and LeBron James, and then the other one turns into Kevin Love, that's pretty nice. Although, wait, was Wiggins two? Wiggins was two, right?
It was Wiggins. Yeah, it was Wiggins
used
to get Love.
Go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not bad.
Not terrible. And that was a horrible draft. That Anthony Bennett draft, obviously a giant miss for them, but that was a pretty bad draft.
Yeah, it's not like they missed out on, you know, LeBron or something like that. So,
Giannis was in that draft. Was Kawhi in that draft? But, I mean, those guys were
Was like 20, yeah. Giannis goes, what, 14?
Giannis went 15, I think, and Kawhi went 11, but I don't remember if Kawhi was in that draft. I'm going to check it out because I think that's information that we should have. Kawhi Leonard was in the 2011 draft, so no, that's too far ago. He was actually in the Kyrie Irving draft.
Yeah, I want to say that was one where they just missed out on a Buddy Hield, maybe? Or no, was it Ben McLemore, maybe?
So
that
it is
that draft.
It's worth pointing out that in this Kyrie Irving draft, in that pick that Cleveland got from the Clippers in the Baron Davis dump, the Cavs did pick 1 and 4, obviously hit a home run with Kyrie at number one. But if
the other one,
they take Tristan Thompson over guys like Kemba Walker, Klay Thompson, Kawhi Leonard, and Jimmy Butler. But Jimmy Butler went 30.
Oh man, yeah. I mean, I really don't hold many teams accountable when it comes to like the later in the round picks. You can't. But like, you know. I mean, you miss on Giannis. I think that's one that a lot of the teams that went, especially Anthony Bennett, who was also considered a project. That was one where, you know, Bennett probably shouldn't have gone one. Oh, I'm looking at it now. Oladipo goes too. That looks a lot more spinning than it did last year.
It does. It does.
Yeah. McCollum 10. That's pretty nice.
Giannis 15. Rookie of the year, Michael Carter. Well, yeah, McCollum. CJ, at Michael Carter-Williams, rookie of the year at number 11, just signed a deal with the Houston Rockets. Stephen Adams, number 12, barely played at Pitt that year. Go Bears in that draft.
Yeah, there's some good players in there.
Glenn Rice Jr., who the 76ers drafted and immediately traded, and I was furious. And
I loved him.
He's been nothing but a head case at just every level of basketball since then, just never able to capitalize on his incredible skills.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Looking at it, if you say you're going to get Oladipo, Giannis, and CJ McCollum out of a draft, that's not a bad draft.
It's not terrible. I mean, it's not great either, but I'm looking at the top 10 is kind of a disaster, but after that, it's good. Top 9.
Yeah, you'll take Adams, you'll take Olynyk. You could argue that 11 through 20 was actually better than 1 through 10.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, easily. 10 through 21, you've got some actual players. So, yeah, it's an ugly start, though, that's for sure. But, yeah, anyway, so the Cavs, just to bring it full circle, could end up at the top of another pretty crappy draft next year. But if they win it and they get, you know, Barrett, then, I think that, you know, you take that, and especially if you trade Love to a team that potentially could be drafting in the lottery, not the Pelicans, obviously, or not the not Oklahoma City, but say they move him somewhere else where they've got a second shot at the lottery. That'd be pretty nice to expedite this rebuild for them.
Yeah, we're gonna have a long time to talk about it, but I'm gonna be really interested to see how this Duke team plays this year, because you have Barrett, Reddish, and Williamson in that lineup. That doesn't seem like a bunch of natural fits.
No, it doesn't. But the talent there is pretty absurd. So you just wonder if Coach K can piece all that together.
Well, actually, let's talk. I mentioned Jimmy Butler just a second ago. Jimmy Butler has not been quiet about his dislike for his teammates on this Minnesota Timberwolves team right now. He's come out vocally against Wiggins in the past. Today came out that he's getting sick and tired of Karl Anthony Towns. Is this guy just doing everything possible to try and get traded a year ahead of his free agency?
I think so. What came out of that story, that's Joe Colley of the Sun-Times here in Chicago. And I think what he's trying to say is Colley reported this last year, and he's close to Butler by all accounts. I think Butler wants to play with Kyrie, however that works out, whether it's whether it's in New York, whether it's in Minnesota, wherever it might be, that's really what he's angling for. So I wonder if he thinks, like, if they can somehow get Towns off the books, then he could end up playing with a Max, with Kyrie, and that team would be – that'd be a nice start. I mean, obviously, in the West, you're pretty much SOL right now, but, you know, if those two get paired on almost any other team, that's a really nice couple pieces to build off of.
Yeah, a lot of talk that Kyrie could be headed to next offseason. I'm looking, trying to see. The Knicks right now are scheduled to have $44.7 million of cap space next offseason. So only enough for one max contract right now. And potentially, you know, they'd be able to fit both Butler and Kyrie Irving onto that team. And, you know, if you listen to the reports, Kevin Durant may also be interested in the Knicks.
Yeah, like I said, I think there's going to be a reckoning in Golden State, whether it's, you know, today, tomorrow. I mean, after this season, after maybe one more year, if it's one of those four, if it's two, something's going to happen, though, where the team that we saw win the title last year, the last 2 years, it's not going to be the same way. And that's not just including the veterans like Iguodala and Livingston. It's one of those four main guys.
You know what? You know what we're gonna do. We got a lot of free agency to talk about, but let's get in our picks for the week. People dig this, and let's get them in right now. We're gonna do something a little bit different than we did last week, aren't you? This is I'm gonna throw a curveball here at you. What we're gonna do? We're on Skybook Sportsbook right now at skybook.ag, and I'm looking at the baseball odds. We're gonna do first MLB team to score a run in their game today.
Wow. Okay. All right.
There is, you can think of it, you can bet on it. It's Skybook. It's an incredible site, tons of options, something for everyone. And, this is going to be interesting. So let's get your picks. We're going to start the Giants, and the Rockies. You have, Chris Stratton versus Antonio Senzatella. Of course. Skybook has the Giants -164 and the Rockies +134. First to score a run. Who gets on the board first?
Ooh. Well, Stratton's better than Senzatella. This game's in Colorado, which means San Francisco bats first. But those odds are kind of rocky, if you'll allow me to use that word. And so I'm going to take Colorado with the odds there. It's not a bet I'm accustomed to making, but like you said, if you can dream it up, I'm sure you can bet on it there at Skybook. So I will pick the Rockies to score first in that game.
Why are you lying to people here, aren't you? You know this is exclusively what you wager on, first to score.
That's true. If you want to roll the dice a little bit, I think this is a fun bet right here. You got to pick first to score, so you're rooting for one team clearly over the other early on, and then once it's over. You move on to the next bet.
Can I tell you, I've never been a giant sports bettor. That's why I do defer to you with this stuff. But when I was kind of into it for a while, the thing that I found a lot of success with was first quarter or first period scoring.
The early line.
Yeah, because I think the better team tends to come out ahead at the beginning. And that was what I found.
In baseball, it's definitely – I often, if I see there being like a clear edge in terms of starting pitching, I'll do that first five line. So that's the first five innings. And so – because, you know, in the later stages, you might get weird stuff with like – one-off pitching matches. You don't know how the bullpens are going to look and, you know, who's benched, who's not. It's sometimes tricky to know. So I like that approach generally. So, you know, the first five is one to look at as an option if you're betting on baseball.
All right, let's get to the second game, the St. Louis Cardinals at the Diamondbacks. We have got Jack Flaherty on the mound against Zach Greinke. Cardinals minus 130 per Skybook, and the Diamondbacks even.
Wow. Well, the Diamondbacks, as we said last week, not very good against right-handed pitching. And Jack Flaherty, right-handed pitcher. So although they're at home, although it's Zach Greinke, Jack Flaherty has been a guy as a very young pitcher for the Cardinals that might be worth capitalizing on. Boy, that's a tough one. But I think I would go with St. Louis in this, and I would take the underdog odds there.
All right, the Pittsburgh Pirates at the Los Angeles Dodgers. Ivan Nova taking on Clayton Kershaw. Skybook has the Pirates plus 101 and the Dodgers minus 131.
That's it, really? With
That's
Kershaw
it.
On the bump?
With Kershaw.
Oh, pounding that. I thought it would be like minus 200 or so, and I've always said you always fade the minus 200 as an underdog. I mean, baseball is just too random to do it any other way, but boy, I love Kershaw in that matchup for sure. If that's really what it is, I'd hammer the Dodgers.
Minus 200, you say, Mr. Khanna. Well, let me take you to the Houston Astros at the Texas Rangers. Dallas on the mound for the Astros, and our guy Austin Beeben-Sterks for the Rangers.
Our guy,
friend of the show.
Oh, yeah.
The Astros are minus 199, so very close to that magical minus 200 line, and the Rangers plus 159.
Oh, man. Well, Keuchel is a very familiar pitcher for the Rangers to face in that division, and our boy Austin Beeben-Sterks has been pretty good. What I'm saying is I like the underdog odds for Texas at home. It's going to be a real hot one, could be a high-scoring game. I like Texas to beat, at least odds-wise, I like Texas over the Astros here.
All right. The Cleveland Indians at the Kansas City Royals. You got Shane Bieber. You got Danny Duffy for the Royals. Skybook has the Indians minus 195, and they have the Royals plus 155.
It's a little rich for me. I really like Shane Bieber. I think that he's going to be a key pitcher for the Indians as they find out Danny Salazar is out for the season officially. Although he hasn't really pitched this year. I like the Royals. I like the Royals getting that with Danny Duffy. I mean, they're soon going to be the team that we bet against almost every single game because of the fact that they'll be rebuilding soon. But I really like Duffy in this one.
Oh, man. Dante Exum re-signs with the Jazz. How does Dante Exum get 3 years? We'll talk about it in a second.
Okay.
The Los Angeles Angels at the Seattle Mariners. The Angels have Andrew Heaney on the mound versus Wade LeBlanc for the Mariners. Skybook has the Angels minus 151 and the Mariners plus 121.
Ooh, I like the Mariners big time. I know that they've slipped a little bit from when they were red hot, but Wade LeBlanc's been pretty good. Andrew Heaney been very up and down for the Angels. Obviously, he's a ton of talent, but I like Seattle. I like Seattle in this one at home. Those odds seem a little bit off. I like Seattle there.
All right. The Red Sox at the Nationals. Brian Johnson on the mound for the Sox. Tanner Roark for the Nationals. Skybook has the Red Sox minus 151, the Nationals plus 121.
Oh, boy. Bryce Harper has been in a slump, to say the least, for Washington this last month or two. But I really like Washington Roark. Kind of a tough pitcher to hit off of if you're not used to him. Brian Johnson, very young for Boston. I still like Washington's lineup a lot, and I think that they should not be underdogs at home, so I'll take the Nats in this one.
Speaking of slumps, my friend, the Baltimore Orioles are at my slumping Philadelphia Phillies. Alex Cobb on the mound for the Orioles, Zach Eflin for the Phillies. Skybook has the Orioles minus 137, the Phillies plus 107.
What? Really? The Phillies absolutely should be favored in that. You sure?
Those are the numbers I'm seeing, sir.
Wow. Okay. Well, we pound the Phillies in that case because despite the fact that they're not playing very well, Zach Eflin has been excellent, and Alex Cobb has been kind of a disaster. So I love Philadelphia in that one.
And maybe this is the case because the Phillies have indeed themselves been getting pounded on a nightly basis of late. Just all that positive stuff going on at the beginning of the season is long gone. Got to turn things around. Hey, Mike Moustakas, that could be our savior. If you like a 319 on base percentage, he is your guy. The Atlanta Braves in New York to take on the New York Yankees. We've got Sean Newcomb on the mound for the Braves. Domingo Germán on the mound for the Yankees. Domingo Germán. Borderline racist, but I feel like I didn't cross the line, and that's important. Skybook has the Braves minus 134, the Yankees plus 104.
Oh, man. The Yankees are rarely going to be an underdog. And at home, boy, I know Sean Newcomb's been good, but I always like the Yankees to tee off at home. They're built to smash home runs out of that park.
Yeah.
I like New York in that one for sure.
All right, let's stick with that other New York franchise, the Metropolitans at the Toronto Blue Jays. Zach Wheeler on the mound for the Mets, Marco Estrada for the Blue Jays. Skybook has the Mets minus 149, the Jays plus 119.
Ooh, wow. Well, Zach Wheeler's been pitching much, much better, trying to reclaim some of that ability that he showed a couple of years ago. But, you know, Marco Estrada been around the block a little bit, pitched a lot against the Mets as an NLer. And I think the Blue Jays, you know, both heavy underdogs against a bad Mets team. They shouldn't be favored by that much against anyone without DeGrom or Syndergaard on the mound. So I like Toronto on that one for sure.
All right, your White Sox at the Lucas Giolito on the bump for the White Sox and Anthony Descalfani.
Descalfani.
On the mound for the Descalfani for the Reds.
There you go.
We got, again, borderline racist, but not there. White Sox minus 121, Reds plus 109, as per Skybook.
Yeah, I like Descalfani a lot. Lucas Giolito been extremely up and down. I got to hammer the Reds there, unfortunately, for my Sox. These are two of the worst teams in baseball, but since he has played a lot better, actually, over the last 2.5 weeks or so, and Descalfani might be their most talented pitcher, really. So I will take Cincinnati in that one with the plus 120 plus.
All right. Congratulations on the signing of Nick Madrigal today.
Full slot for the
White Sox, I believe.
Yes, sir. And expected. I'm glad I wasn't too overslot. And, you know, I expect this guy to be up in a hurry. I think he's going to move fairly quickly. So, you know, next 2 years, can see him being slotted right at the top of that White Sox lineup when they're somewhat competitive, hopefully.
Sounds good. The Tampa Bay Rays at the Miami Marlins. We've got Ryan Yarbrough on the mound for the Rays and Trevor Richards for the Marlins. Skybook has the Rays minus 158 and the Fish plus 128.
Oh, man. Trevor Richards, really talented young pitcher, but probably maybe shouldn't be in the pros just yet. I really like the Rays. They're Yarbrough, one of their classics, quote-unquote, beginners, I guess, instead of starters, right, where he'll pitch two or three innings for them, right, and they'll roll it out after that. They're just so much better than the Marlins. I like Tampa.
All right, our final game today, the San Diego Padres at the Oakland Athletics. Clayton Richard on the mound for the Padres. Chris Bassett for the Athletics. Skybook has the Padres minus 138, the A's plus 108. Which direction are you going?
Wow. Hammer the A's at home with Bassett's been really good. Bullpen arm turned starter. Richard's been pretty good for the Padres, but the A's are better. They're kind of sneaky hanging around there in the or AL West. And yeah, I like Oakland a lot with that line.
Cool. Well, if you listened to Anshu's picks last week, you've already made millions and millions of dollars. So continue to do that this week. You'll be a rich person. We assure you, Anshu will pay back any money lost. That's how confident he is.
That is not true. The words of Chris Horrell do not represent the words of the Leftovers or the Underdog in general.
Or the Leftovers. That's for damn sure.
I mean, that's for sure.
But, but it's fun. I think you did pretty well last week, so it's going to be fun to see how you do this week. let's turn our attention back to the NBA because there is quite a bit going on. And just now, get the update that Dante Exum re-signs with the Utah Jazz, 3 years, $33 million.
Wow, that is that's a decent chunk of change for Dante Exum. I mean, over $10 million is nice per year for him. There's a guy who obviously super high pick, but then hasn't shown a whole lot. I mean, plays what some, I think. Still a lot of basketball ahead of Dante. Still a lot of basketball ahead of Dante Exum. But, you know, 22, 23 years old, it's, I don't know, 3 years, 33, what do you think? Is that too much?
Well, sorry, I missed a little bit of what you said. You cut out in my headphones there for a second. But, yeah, it's too much. This is a guy played 14 games last year, didn't start one. I know he's coming off of a major injury, another major injury. Mm. Only played 162 games in his career so far, 8 points in 16 minutes last year. You like
it?
And he's a career 30% three-point shooter. Like, I don't – he was a fun prospect back in 2014, but – I don't get $33 million for him. I know the Jazz apparently like what they have going on there. They're trying to keep their core together. They re-signed Favors to a fairly, no pun intended, favorable deal for them. I think 224. That's the witty puns is basically what the show is all about.
Always.
Yes, I think it's too much. I think it's way too much.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, it's one thing to say you keep your core together, but then I don't know that Exum's part of their core. I mean, I know he's young and he's played less than half the minutes per game, like you said, but, you know, the flashes that I've seen out of him, I get it. I get why you'd want to be interested in him, but 3 for 33 is a real commitment for a Jazz team that, you know, if they continue to ascend the way they did last year with Donovan Mitchell and he keeps getting better as he should, I mean, I think you're going to want that space clear for either a trade or something else. And I don't think a backup guard, swing guard, is going to be your answer.
I could not agree more. I could not agree more than I do. Let's get to the Dallas Mavericks in a move that's just year in the making. We've got DeAndre Jordan finally signs with the Mavericks, a 1 year deal, $24 million. We're going to see a lot of 1 year deals as we go forward.
But I feel like that's a strange move. I mean, it's great for the Mavs, but didn't Jordan reject, was it a $24.5 million qualifying offer from
something along those lines
from the Clippers? So, I mean, he just clearly was done there. I mean, that's all that means. Mm-hmm. Dallas 1 year. I guess it makes sense for Dallas because, like, they don't have their first rounder next year, right? Likely. I mean, and so, well, without him, likely. Now with him, there's a decent chance they reclaim it. Or wait, no, sorry. It's top five protected.
Round. Yeah. Yeah, other way around.
Maybe it's Dirk's swan song. I don't know. But 1 year, $24 million seems pretty nice for Dallas and pretty odd for Jordan. I would have guessed he could have commanded 3 years for more than that.
Yeah, you would think so. But I just don't understand what's going on here. We'll have another, you know, not on DeAndre Jordan's level, but a very useful 3-and-D small forward, combo forward, 1 year, $12 million from the Suns.
And also, kind of odd that Houston doesn't re-sign him, right? Couldn't they? I mean, he could have fit into that.
I wonder if they were trying to dump money to see if they could potentially make the LeBron thing work.
Yeah, but like once that doesn't work, why don't you just re-sign him, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I do not have an answer for that one. A lot of 1 year deals. Trevor Ariza to the Suns, 112. It doesn't really make sense for anyone to me. I don't understand what the Suns are thinking. I don't really understand why he leaves Houston. Is he the backup three? Is he a small ball four? What is he in Phoenix?
I mean, I assume he's going to start, right?
Over who? Over Josh Jackson? Booker.
So you got Booker, Jackson, Ariza. Who's running the point there? I mean, Ayton is probably starting.
Ayton's going to start. I see a point guard and a power forward open.
I mean, could you move Jackson to four?
I think you'd probably move Ariza before Jackson.
Really? Okay. Well, either way, I 1 year, $12 million. You're probably, I mean, at worst, Ariza is your sixth man, I guess. I'm guessing. Yeah. All right, so maybe he's 1 year because he and Jackson, he kind of helps build Jackson up to the point where he's starting and spend, you know, doing
and
a lot of
and Mikal Bridges. Heavy.
And Mikal Bridges, yeah, there you go. So Mikal Bridges, probably the most NBA ready player in this draft, and you know, he's coming off the bench for a team that, you know, just got the number one pick. So right. I don't know. I really don't get what they're doing there.
It's confusing. All right, we're about halfway through, so let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Hey guys, Chris here, and I want to talk to you once again this week about Skybook Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of the Underdog Podcast, and our favorite sportsbook, regardless of whether or not they're sponsoring the show. We've tried a bunch of sportsbooks, and if you want fast payouts, Skybook is for you. If you want an easy interface, Skybook is for you. And if you want incredible options for what you can wager on, Skybook is definitely for you. From the World Cup to Major League Baseball to football, even football prop bets. Are you getting ready for the NFL season? Are you getting excited? Are you thinking who's going to be MVP? Who's going to win Rookie of the Year? Skybook has those Rookie of the Year odds up already. You got Saquon Barkley of the Giants plus 140. That's stealing money. That is absolutely stealing money. Put down $100, win $140 on Saquon Barkley. Skybook's also got an incredible 100 for 100 offer for our listeners. All you have to do is deposit a minimum of $100 and they will give you a $100 cash bonus. That's $200 for $100. You're not going to beat that deal. It carries an incredibly reasonable 18x rollover. And that amazing offer is valid to all new signups from the continental United States and Canada. And on top of that, you're not only getting the extra $100. On top of that, they're also going to give you a $25 casino chip for free, just for doing it. So go do it, and you'll be happy. Visit Skybook Sportsbook at skybook.ag today for all your sportsbook needs. All right, we're back, and the big news is obviously what the Lakers have done this offseason. LeBron James signs a 4-year max contract with the Los Angeles Lakers. I think the most surprising thing, even more so than signing in L.A., is that he's guaranteed to be there for at least 3 years, aren't you?
Yeah. A little bit of surprise, I would say, since that morning your boys had met with his representation. And
I'm mad about that, by the way. I'm very mad about that.
Why is that?
Because it came out that he knew what he was going to do on Saturday night. So if you know what you're doing Saturday night, don't take any more meetings. I got updates saying that a lot of NBA executives thought LeBron had made his decision and this was just theater at this point. And it turns out that's what it was. Like, you don't need that. Wherever you sign, it's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a huge story. It doesn't need to be built up.
Yeah, I mean, he claims it's a courtesy meeting. I'm sure if the Sixers felt like they had even a 1% chance, it's worth the meeting, because in their mind, maybe they say, hey, we have a deal for Kawhi if we want it, but we're not taking it unless you're coming, and, you know, that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, you know, you never know what might happen in 3 years, and that's kind of where we're at right now, because 3 years, what a commitment, and what a slap in the face to Dan Gilbert that he was willing to sign for 3 years with a team where he doesn't know anybody, has no real connection to the team, and that he now turns around and says, you know what, not only was I not willing to commit to you for 1 year, and at any point since when I signed with Cleveland for the second time, you know, I'm willing to go and commit to 3 years with Magic Johnson right now. And that, to me, just really insulting, candidly, to the Cavaliers organization. I am legitimately stunned at how willing Cavs fans have been to thank LeBron and just move on from this, especially based on the uproar last time.
Yeah. Well, I think the decision thing was a big part of leaving a bad taste in fans' mouths, especially, you know, we talk about this being a situation where LeBron knew what he was going to do even when taking meetings on Sunday. If you believe all the decision stuff, then those three guys made that decision years before. That's what they were going to do when free agency hit, and that would be their opportunity to play together. There was no decision. That was theater. This is just ignorant.
I think it's ignorant. I am willing to bet right now, I wish our study the Skybook had this, but I'm telling you right now that LeBron 3 years from now will look back at this, and I think he will very much regret the decision he made here. I really believe that strongly.
Oh, yeah. He's going to get Space Jam 2 made, but he is never going to play in another finals.
No. Oh, yeah. I don't see it. I really don't. I mean, even if this Warriors thing somewhat collapses, it's not going to completely collapse. Even if you end up with just two or three of those five guys they have now, I just don't see the Lakers being better unless the only way they are is if they sign Kevin Durant, and I don't see that happening either. So to me, I really don't get it. I think that, you know, the underreported thing about this whole thing that I think is maybe not underreported, but just odd, is the amount of faith that LeBron James is putting in Magic Johnson. Like, what? Yeah. Why does Magic Johnson suddenly merit? Like, I got it with Pat Riley.
Right.
I just don't – I do not see how – and you obviously get it with him going back to Cleveland, but you just – this is – it makes no sense to me. I think it is – you know, he's entitled to do whatever he wants, but from a basketball legacy perspective, I think that it's a complete disaster.
Couldn't agree with you more. The Lakers, Team LeBron, who LeBron is obviously already being consulted on all personnel moves as per all reports – which, by the way, I'm just, like, I'm fine with him not being in Philadelphia if this is what's going to come with it. The Lakers bring in Rajon Rondo in a one-year, $9 million contract. They also bring in Lance Stephenson, who was renounced earlier by the Indianapolis Pacers. They get him for $4.4 million. And they bring in JaVale McGee, one-year minimum contract.
Yep, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for one
and
year, $12 million or whatever.
Yeah, and KCP resigns, yeah.
So, you know, I think that all those moves in concert just seem to say bizarre would be an understatement, I think. Like, I really don't know what they're doing. I think what they're doing is having LeBron basically a one-year tryout leading up to figuring out who they keep and who they deal the next year. But I think that he is vastly overrating the ability of Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson and himself to be able to build this thing out. Like, I really, really do. He thinks that he himself, and let's not forget, LeBron's going to be 35 heading into the 2019-2020 season.
That was going to be my point. Yeah.
So, like, who is going, I mean, maybe a few players are, but, like, I don't know that Kawhi's dropping everything to go there. I don't know that, you know, anybody. And Klay Thompson, you know, I know his dad has connections there, but, you know, he seems to love being a Warrior. I just don't get it. I really don't. And I think for a guy who's 34, I'd be trying to tack titles onto my legacy as much as I could. And I'm blown away. I have no idea what he's doing.
Yeah, agreed completely. If this is a tryout, like you said, a one-year thing, you know, he's going to be 35 next year. Even for LeBron James, father time's going to hit sooner or later.
Absolutely. That is my biggest thing about this whole thing. He's treating this like he's 27. I mean, we saw last year his defense slip, like, immensely. I mean, I would say 2 years ago, it sure looked like Kevin Durant was every bit the player he was in the finals. I know that he had a cast around him. You know, I don't want to go and make this about, like, not thinking LeBron is amazing right now, but I think that, like you said, father time catches up with everyone, and it's already started to look like that with LeBron. This is not football. You know, he can't play till he's 44 at a super high level. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, like, to treat this like you're 27, I think is just shocking. And for a guy that's been so good and so intelligent with the way that he's made and so shrewd with, you know, his decisions over the course of his career from a legacy perspective, like, I think this has been terrible, and what he's done since then has been terrible.
The Rondo thing is confusing to me, too, because that's now two no-shoot point guards on that Lakers roster.
Yeah, I mean, is that – so I'll ask you, is that a situation where he's gotten Rondo there in part because he wants Lonzo to become young Rondo?
I mean, maybe, but young Rondo can't shoot. And this is a game more and more every single year where you need guys at every position to be able to shoot the basketball. Rondo has never been a great leader. He's never been a great teammate. I don't know if I want Lonzo Ball learning from Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. But I think that didn't LeBron come out recently and say, like, oh, the way that they play, the Pelicans played, and you could tell what Rondo meant to that team. I'm guessing that Rondo's time with Dwayne Wade helped inform LeBron's decision to bring him in there. You know, the way that Rondo played those that very small two-game sample in the 2016 playoffs. So I don't know. I mean, I think there are worse fits than Rondo. I just think that in concert, all those moves together just make no sense. I don't know what they're going for. I think that the way that they're built right now feels a whole lot like a six seed. You know, like,
well, yeah.
I don't think they're as good as the Cavs were last year.
Well, the thing that I think is interesting is that LeBron must be ready. At least he believes he's ready to play off the ball basically full time. Because now you have two point guards in Ball and Rondo who are flat out useless if LeBron has the basketball.
Yeah, and you've got Brandon Ingram there too. I mean, there are a lot of high usage players without a lot of like production. You know, they aren't creating offense efficiently, at least not at this stage. And so I think that I really don't like what in LeBron's mind. Why does he sign, you know, any of these guys? Why is
I don't know.
Well, I get one or two of them, but to use all your space up basically on these guys doesn't make any sense to me. I think that you lose a lot of your flexibility with that. I know they're all 1 year deals, but it's odd. It's wasting an entire year of your legacy.
Yeah,
and isn't that why you left Cleveland in the first place?
Right. The Lakers can get to $31 million under the cap next year, so they would need to make some moves to get max cap room. And that is just, I don't know. I don't understand what they're thinking. I don't understand what the thought process is there for the Lakers if the goal isn't to be able to flat out sign a max cap room player next offseason as well to complement LeBron. It does not make any sense whatsoever to me. It was a confusing day for the Los Angeles Lakers, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not just one max guy either. It's two. You need two around LeBron, especially an aging LeBron.
Yeah.
So,
by the way, and let's not forget to mention that if not for something that we're going to talk about in just a little bit, this LeBron James Lance Stevenson combination would be one of the most peculiar in the NBA.
Oh my God! Yeah, we haven't even talked about Lance yet, which is maybe the most hilarious thing about all this.
I don't know. Well, a lot more moves were made yesterday. The Pacers get the guy. I think the Lakers should have gone after. I wish the 76ers would have gone after Tyreke Evans, 1 year, $12 million, because everybody's signing a 1 year deal. They also get Doug McDermott on a 3 year, $22 million contract.
Doug McDermott, I think, is what you meant to say.
How do you like these moves for the Pacers?
I like them. I mean, I not the McDermott part, but I like the way that the Pacers have operated over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Oladipo thing is, I'm sure they didn't even know if they were getting an Oladipo, that this would bring out the absolute best in everything that he is. But, you know, I like Tyreke Evans. I think at worst he's a candidate to be flipped, but they obviously showed last year that they could be, if not a contender, you know, a factor in the Eastern Conference. And they're obviously kind of trending towards that again. Tyreke Evans is a nice fit there. Shot, what, like 40% from three last year, right?
Yeah, over the past couple of seasons, he's actually shot very well from the outside.
He's been a very underrated player, considering what the beginning of his career, kind of, or middle of his career, I guess, looked like. And I do like that. I think that they're a better team today than they were in the playoffs, which is saying something. For a team that very nearly knocked out the Cavs. So, you know, they're kind of like the Jazz to me in some ways, just in terms of trying to build what they have, obviously a little older. But the door is much wider open for them being in the East. So it's interesting to see them pick and choose and see, you know, kind of what works around Oladipo, because I think that that's sort of what you're trending towards if you're Indiana.
Yeah, I wonder if the thinking for Evans is that, you know, this is a guy who scored 19.4 points per game, along with 5.1 rebounds and 5.2 assists for the Grizzlies last year. While, like you said, shooting literally 0.1% under 40 for the season, Incredible year for Tyreke. I wonder if his thinking is, if I do this on a better team next year, I'm set up for a big contract the following offseason.
Yeah, how old is Tyreke right now?
28.
So he could be setting himself up.
He's not that old.
Yeah, he could set himself up for a 3-year deal. I mean, look. if he's awesome, if he's an all-star in the East, which again, it's very possible out East, anything's possible
yes.
out East. You know, who knows? He gets a 2 or 3 year deal from one of these teams that misses out on like a really good player, or even maybe as a complimentary piece. I don't think he's going to be like a max guy by any means, obviously, but you know, 29 years old, a guy that's going to have proven himself in the playoffs, like hypothetically, or maybe even to stay in Indiana, I think goes well, you know, him and Oladipo, and then you add like a really nice swingman to that. That's a team that has potential. Like I said, anything can happen in the East. So who knows? He might really be. I think that's a great point that he might. There's a great opportunity for him to rebuild his stock.
Yeah, I was hoping that we could give him a similar contract in Philadelphia, get him to be sort of that sixth man role for that Sixers team next year. But I can see his perspective too, where it more sense to go to a team like the Pacers, where he's more mm-hmm. guaranteed time.
For sure, because like you could see the outlines of him potentially getting buried in Philly should he, you know, like if things work out a certain way. So I think that this ends up well for him. And, you know, I think that in some ways it's good for you too. Cause like, you know, Fultz is going to get every chance he could possibly get to be their top guy at point guard. So I think it works out fine with McConnell and the whole thing. So, you know, good fits all around, but the East is, like I said, I can't say it enough. It is just such a S show right now.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, for the record, I think Fultz will be listed as a small forward because of the absurdity of Ben Simmons needing to be listed as the point guard. That's going to mean Ben's the one, JJ's the two, Markel's the three. But I completely get what you're saying. Markel's going to get all the opportunity in the world to play. By all accounts, he's progressing very well under Drew Hanlon in Los Angeles, working hard this offseason. So.
Shot looks good. I saw the clips. Look good.
Shot looks good. So I have a lot of confidence in Markel this coming season. Just wish he had a couple of new, more exciting teammates than what he has right now. But the offseason's only one day old. Let's talk about the Pelicans.
It's crazy
so Julius Randle gets... I know, right? Julius Randle gets renounced by the Lakers because they need the cap room to sign Lance Stephenson, you know, a move everyone's going to make. And he signs a 2-year, $18 million deal with the Pelicans. They also sign Elfrid Payton to a 1-year, $2.7 million contract.
I like the Pelicans offseason better than I like the Lakers offseason, I'll tell you that much. You know, I don't know about Elfrid Payton, like you said. I think that he probably needs to cut a little bit of the top off there to make himself useful. But Pelicans are interesting. I mean, I shouldn't say I like it better because losing Anthony.
Right. Losing Anthony Davis. Yeah. Anthony Davis's cohort is incredibly difficult for that team. But yes, 2 years, $18 million for Randle. That's a heck of a bargain, right?
I agree.
Yeah, and I'm not talking over you, but I have now picked up on when you're dropping out in the headset, so I'm just talking during those periods. Think I'm talking over you.
Okay, I got it. So is it possible, like, why are these guys not, like, none of these bad teams want to sign Julius Randle? It's not like he's going to make you so good can't get a better, you know, like, can't the Bulls use Julius Randle? Can't the Hawks use Julius Randle, take a shot on him?
I don't see why not. It's kind of an unconventional but useful five, I guess, for the Bulls.
Yeah, or just like, what do they have to lose by getting someone like that? I mean, fine. 1 year from now, maybe you cost yourself the possibility of having two max guys, I guess. I don't really get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 218 is a great contract.
Oh, absolutely.
That's basically what Mozgov makes in any given year.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't know, man. I'm so like confused by basketball contracts. What's been going on? Yeah. What the Lakers did? Like, what happened with DeMarcus Cousins? I cannot wrap my head around, and I feel like if I try to explain it away, it would just be a lie, like as if I know what the logic is.
Right. A couple of off seasons ago when we were looking at those contracts handed out to guys like Mozgov and Dellavedova, if you're telling me that, you know, 2 years later, somebody like Tyreek is signing for $12 million or Julius Randle is signing for $9 million, I'm not going to believe you.
Right. And I mean, like, it's not like Julius Randle did anything to not be worth you know, more than that. Like, was he a bad teammate? Did he show nothing? Is he not a potential future five in today's NBA?
Well, you know, I think I've got issues with Randall fancying himself a little bit better ball handler than he actually is.
Okay,
and that sort of frustrates me. I watched some of those Lakers games, and his attitude would drive me crazy. Too much smiling after a turnover. I don't like that stuff.
Okay.
But
he's
worth more than $9 million.
Yeah.
Worth more than $9 million for sure.
Yeah. So like, why doesn't a team like a team like the Jazz or the Pacers, for example, like you've got the money, like why aren't these types of teams taking shots, or even like throw the Suns in there, maybe not the Suns because of Aiden, but you know, a team that has a hole or a potential use for like a 4/5 that's athletic, or the Magic, like what. I mean, I feel like I'm missing something. The Hawks, for sure, I think, are a team. The Pistons, someone like that. Why aren't they making these types of moves?
I don't know. This may go down as the bargain basement offseason, and there's some decent contracts being handed out, two of which go to very crucial members of the Philadelphia 76ers bench last season.
Yeah.
Late season acquisitions, Ersan Ilyasova and Marco Bellinelli, both leaving for former teams. Apparently, they just like teams they've played for in the past. The Ilyasova goes to the Bucks for 3 years, $21 million. Bellinelli to the Spurs, 2 years, $12
million. Yeah, I mean, and they both serve very different purposes. I mean, I think it's easy to group the Euros off the bench together, but, you know, Bellinelli is certainly much more of a shooter. Ilyasova, you got to see it firsthand, but I think Ilyasova is one of the truly underrated players in the league. Like, I think that I know he's 30. 3 years is quite a commitment next to Giannis, when I think you should be maybe slashing salary and trying to get that next really great player to play with them. But I also think that 3 years at $7 million apiece is a bargain for a guy who had.
Right. Well, one thing that is worth pointing out is that there are some questions about Ersan Ilyasova's actual age. If you do some Googling about that, I don't remember the specifics of it. But there's some issues about the person we now know as Ersan Ilyasova just showed up at a youth tournament, and there's no real documentation of him before that.
Oh, interesting.
So
okay.
He may not actually be 30 years old, or that could just be one of those stories. You never know. But it's worth looking into. I don't remember the specifics. Do the Googling yourself, and you'll find some interesting stuff about Ersan Ilyasova, if that's your cup of tea.
Will do. I know that his wife and kids lived in Milwaukee, so I think that partially informed his decision to go back there.
It's a good fit for Milwaukee, too. I'll miss him in Philadelphia. You need a backup four to Saric right now. I was hoping Anthony Tolliver was the guy I was really hoping for. I think he is one of the quietly super, super underrated productive stretch fours in the NBA. Signed with Minnesota, though. I was hoping potentially Kyle O'Quinn is a backup big man. I don't know if we're going to have the money for him anymore. I don't know. We're going to see what happens. But there were a couple more. Before we get to the big one, there were a couple more interesting little bargain basement signings. Ed Davis, a guy who I think's always been really productive, goes to the Nets for 1 year, 4.4.
Really? All right. So what makes that interesting to you, I guess?
I just think he's one of those analytics guys, man. And you put him on the court and he produces. When he gets the opportunity to play, incredibly productive player, per 36s, super solid. I guess actually he's dropped a little bit over the last couple of years, the weird usage rate in Portland, but especially when he was in Memphis, Toronto, and LA earlier, he rebounds the ball. He blocks shots. It's not like that on my team. $4.4 million, solid backup big man, done.
Sure, that's true. That's fair. I mean, that's like JaVale McGee without all the weirdness.
Right. Although, isn't the weirdness really what makes JaVale McGee JaVale McGee at this point?
It is. And I like JaVale, for the record. I think that he's just fine. And in the roommate section, that's just fine for the Lakers. I think too many people have spent too much time talking and being critical of JaVale and that move, when they should be spending all the time talking about all those moves in concert.
Yeah, agreed. The Wizards get a pair of interesting players. One just now is starting to come together. They get Jeff Green for 1 year, $2.5 million, and they're about to agree to terms with Dwight Howard on a contract that could be worth up to the mid-level exception.
Yeah, so Dwight Howard becomes their new Gortat, I guess, but weirder. Mm. And You know, obviously, yeah. It's been well documented how much people have disliked playing with Howard. But talent-wise, you know, it's, he's still got a lot of that ability, or at least some of it. And, yeah, you know, like the Wizards, it's just interesting because of what happened, you know, with the Cavs and, you know, LeBron's shifting and all that. And so, you know, it opens the door, obviously, in the East. And the Wizards are one of those teams that could potentially, you could see stepping into the void, maybe a team that was otherwise going to kind of break it down, as we talked about with Beal and Wall. You know, now maybe tries another shot at it, see what they have with Porter and Oubre and everybody else. And you know, you add Howard and Jeff Green to that, Jeff Green coming home. And, you know, who knows? I think I don't see them being anything better than a 3 seed or a 4 seed, but, you know, things open up for the Wizards a little bit by doing this.
Yeah, I don't have any idea how the East is going to shape up. I think it's a fair assumption that the Celtics are going to be at the top of it.
I think so.
But then you have, like, with the Sixers, the Raptors, the Pacers, and the Wizards. I mean, the Bucks. I could really see those guys argue any order that it happens to come out of a hat.
Agreed. But then you look at, and I think those teams are right, but if you look at the rest of the East, they're all just so bad. You think of the Knicks and the Bulls and the, you know, the Hawks and Magic and Nets. I mean, it is like basically there's no room for really much jockeying there in between. Like, you've got your top 6 or 7, and then you've got your bottom 5 or 6, and there aren't many teams in the middle.
Right. I mean, the only teams in the middle are kind of Detroit and Miami, I guess.
Miami, yeah. And the Knicks. The Knicks with Porzingis back maybe become semi.
But I don't think Porzingis. I'm saying Porzingis does not play this year. That's my prediction.
Wow, really? Why is that? You just think he's too banged up, or?
Well, I mean, if you look at the recovery time, you're talking about a year. It happened post Christmas. Best case scenario, he's back January, February. At that point, I think the Knicks are completely out of it. Why play him for 10 games at the end of the season and risk something weird happening?
And honestly,
hurting your team's chance to pick higher in the draft. I think end of the day, they're going to end up sitting him for the whole season.
I mean, it's certainly possible. And I wonder, yeah. Oh, I guess the reason to play him is because he's going to be making like $20 million next year, whatever it is. But
he's still going to be making that regardless. I would rather have the number one pick than the number five pick or whatever.
Hey, you are preaching to the choir on the Tank Fest, my friend. I am with you completely. But again, it's the Knicks, so I can see them messing around and doing something dumb.
Well, for the record, because of this thing we're going to talk about, the last move we're going to talk about, I think there's 29 teams in the NBA that should be tanking next season. But we're not going to get to that just yet. There are a couple more moves. One, speaking of those New York Knicks, under the radar move that I did not see until I was looking at the signings today, Mario Hezonja goes to the Knicks on a 1-year, $6.5 million contract.
Yeah, and I mean, he, like you said, with Porzingis out for at least half the season, Hezonja is going to have plenty of time to play out there and a lot of shots to jack up, which we know he doesn't hesitate on. And, you know, actually, a nice signing for the Knicks, because if he's really good, you can always flip him at the deadline for, you know, a conditional pick or something. And, you know, who knows, maybe he likes it there and he ends up staying. So I like that, like a no-risk, high-reward move.
Yeah, lots of shots for Hezonja, lots of shots for Kevin Knox. It's they will be able to take their beating next year and be better moving forward once there's actual basketball players surrounding them.
That's right.
Weird kind of lateral move for the Trailblazers. They renounced Shabazz Napier, who had something of a breakout year in Portland last year, and they replace him with Seth Curry.
Yeah, and I mean, Napier was solid. I like Seth. I mean, Seth, before he got hurt, was actually, you know, it's obviously easy to make fun of him because he's Steph's brother and he played at Duke and all that stuff. But, you know, he was actually showing some really nice flashes on Dallas before he got hurt. I mean, if you look at his stats from 2015-16, it wasn't terrible.
Wasn't bad last year at all. 12.8 points per game, 70 games played for the Mavericks team. Shot 42%, 42.5% from three.
Before that.
That's an interesting player. The problem with that is he can't play any defense.
I think you're hoping that he's kind of like your microwave bench guy. But, you know, seems like the kind of guy you can win with. I mean, for the Blazers, you're kind of just trying to tack on backup guard pieces, you know, potentially come off the bench when McCollum or Lillard are out or hurt. And, you know, I you know, at the outset of this offseason, I really thought that the Blazers and Wizards and even the Raptors, to a certain extent, were in the position to kind of blow it up. And, you know, it clearly seems like they're all going to go back to the drawing board with what they've got and just try it again. So, or not go back to the drawing board, I should say, just kind of add on to what they have. And I don't know if I agree with it, but I like these types of pieces, I think, are nice because hypothetically, if you deal Lillard or McCollum, you know, maybe Seth Curry ends up stepping into that void down the line.
Potentially. And I like Seth Curry. I'm not knocking it. I just think it's kind of a weird move since Napier did have a good year in Portland last year.
He did.
So when I went to bed last night, I was hoping that Philadelphia, with about $14 million of cap room remaining, would split that up on one-year deals between Kyle O'Quinn and Wayne Ellington.
Mm.
Today, we use up that cap room. They acquire Wilson Chandler from the Denver Nuggets along with a 2021 second-round pick and right to switch second-round picks in 2022, critical element to any trade, swapping second-round picks 5 years from now. And they now have $2 million left in cap space. You know, Wilson Chandler, a fine player, I guess. You know, he's a grown-up. He's another guy to throw against the Celtics. But I don't know. It's not how I would have allocated those funds.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it seems like the Sixers are really putting quite a bit of stock into that 2021 season and the double draft because into that draft. I mean, if you add, you know, if that second rounder turns into a first rounder, if you have double the, you know, classes. So,
sure.
You know, I don't know if that's how it's going to end up working out, but either way, they've doubled down on it. And, you know, I think that Chandler's still useful. And, yeah, I think that they could have used another shooter, but by re-signing J.J. Redick, they've kind of covered some of that. It'll be interesting to see how he fits in. And, again, I don't know who's running the show in terms of the transactions. If it's Brett Brown that, like, really thinks that, you know, he can use Wilson Chandler next year or not, or – you know, if Chandler becomes expendable at the deadline because he is an expiring contract and, you know, maybe they're able to flip it in a three-way or something like that. But, you know,
Yeah, it's interesting. Chandler's just, you know, super exciting basketball player. I get it. He's a guy. He can score. He can rebound. The shaky outside shot concerns me a little bit, but, you know, Wilson Chandler, welcome to Philadelphia, I guess.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, all the excitement about Zaire Smith.
Smith has looked really good. Smith has looked really good. You look at the shooting. I mean, granted, we're talking about in the summer league workout. He has looked really, really good. I'll be excited to see him actually start to play a little bit on the 6th. I believe your Bulls take they start to play on the 5th, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Can't wait.
I will be. I'll be tuning in to watch those little baby Bulls with my guys Chandler Hutchison and Dale Carter Jr.
I am looking forward to see Hutch out there. That to me is going to be fun.
All right. Well, let's get to it. The big news. DeMarcus Cousins signs a 1-year contract for the taxpayer mid-level exception of $5.3 million with the Golden State Warriors. Now, it's worth pointing out that he is probably going to be out until December or January of the Achilles injury, but oh boy, DeMarcus Cousins, a Golden State Warrior for the team first time since 1937, a team is going to be able to have five players who have all been All-Stars the previous year in their starting lineup.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I think that, so a lot of people have come out and obviously been anti-Warriors.
Yeah, I get that too. But the Warriors didn't do anything. They didn't do anything wrong. They just took advantage of the situation a couple of off seasons ago where, you know, they get him in a year with a cap spike. Like, the Warriors aren't the bad guys. The Warriors are the beneficiaries of a broken system.
Absolutely. And not only the beneficiaries of a broken system, but turn around and put the onus. This is kind of what I was trying. Look, I mean, what he did here, what Cousins did to fit into that exception is, you know, that's made for players like JaVale McGee. It's not made for players like DeMarcus Cousins. I mean,
no, I know that, and I get that. I just think the NBA salary cap is the dumbest salary cap in sports.
Oh, it's terrible.
And, you know, it's not tanking that's ruining the sport. It's the salary cap. It's the soft cap. You know, the Warriors can pay $400 million a year and just keep winning championship after championship after championship because of a few smart moves that they made and a few lucky bounces that came along the way.
Yep.
You know, I've said this for years. There's a very easy way to fix this. No max
hard
contracts
cap.
And a hard cap.
Hard cap, no max. Done. Yeah. I mean,
done. Well, easy. Exactly.
Yeah.
If you have 150, you know, whatever, you can even raise the number. Say it's $120 million every team has to spend. If you want to get those top guys and you think you want LeBron James and you think he's worth $60 million, $70 million, and he probably is, then you have $50 million for the rest of your team. No exceptions, no taxpayer exception, no mid-level, no biannual. Ridiculous.
Right. And I mean, I think that the second half of that, by hard capping it, removes the possibility of these super spending teams, obviously. And I think you remove all the exceptions, screw the exceptions. I think that what they're worried about, obviously, from a players association perspective, is the idea that the bottom half of the league becomes like a lower class. And there's this huge divide between the elites, what they're making, and the fact that the teams will be beholden to those elite players and kind of everybody else. But the reality is, the NBA is by far the fewest players. So that gulf is not going to matter that much because there aren't that many guys.
How about this? In exchange for getting rid of the getting a hard cap, raise the minimum contract.
Yeah, there you go. You can only have certain – you're right. That changes the gulf. And you could even say, you know, at a certain level of experience, you raise the minimum of what that player can make. But you don't. But
absolutely.
That the problem with that is that's how the mid-level exception got created, because they basically say, well, what's the minimum, the room level minimum, whatever the case may be. And like after a certain amount of years, you can only make X little amount. But by hard capping the whole thing, then it's all good. You get out of that whole thing. So I just
no more
you know,
exceptions.
No more so exceptions. Done. No more soft cap. No more soft cap. Just get rid of that. Like it just. Again, I'm not even mad about this, honestly. I'm not mad at the Warriors or Cousins about it.
I'm not either.
You should. If anyone's pissed off about this whole thing, blame your team. Blame your favorite team, unless it's the Warriors. Like, blame the Pelicans. Blame the Bulls. Blame anybody.
Okay. I'm going to – this is just because this is important to the, relevant to this conversation. I'm going to stop you.
Yeah.
Bleacher Report just reports that Boogie turned down a two-year $40 million offer from the Pelicans prior to the end of last season.
Wow. All right. Well, that sort of changes it, I would say.
You could just remove blame the Pelicans from that.
Okay, fair enough.
But you can still blame everybody else.
Blame everybody else. And, I mean, you know, I'm sure he could have gone back to the Pelicans, tail between his legs, and said, you know, I deserve more than that. I mean, I can't imagine had Boogie gone out and been like, all right, anybody willing to pay me just over $10 million, that there wouldn't be a line out the door for that. But – the reality is that he wanted a max or close to a max deal, and, you know, failing that, he was willing to invest in himself at a rate of basically costing himself $15 million a year. And, you know.
Well, for one year, though.
For 1 year, right. $15 million for 1 year.
Yeah, it's not. And you get to win a championship, and you get to be a part of something that is just incredible. You're part of the best team ever assembled on paper.
It's going to be fun, too. I think my favorite thing about this whole thing is how everyone just assumes Boogie's like this terrible teammate and all that, and he's going to be like, oh, but he's going to tear them up. He is not a terrible teammate. He is it's so ridiculous. The amount, and this all started with stupid Clay Travis or whoever came out and said that he was – you know, like, oh, I bet he's out of the league. He's such a thug. And he's literally never gotten in trouble, like, from a legal perspective. So, you know, like, I'm looking forward to Boogie Cousins turning that narrative around if he's able to. I know there's a lot of blockheads out there that basically don't get it. But, you know, it's just it's going to be awesome seeing him win the title, honestly, because I know that that's kind of not the leading opinion right now, but I'm just so like, it's just so nauseating how everyone blames like the Warriors for this. And I'm not a Warriors fan by any means or a Cousins, you know, like I'm not like an outward Cousins fan. And I know you're not really either on either one, but like, it's just stupid to act like, oh, you know, this is somehow their fault for doing what makes sense.
Yeah, they're somehow cheating by drafting Steph Curry number 7, Klay Thompson number 11, Draymond Green in the second round. Like, the Warriors...
building a culture people want to be around.
Despite public opinion, like, the Warriors are what you want every single NBA franchise to be. That's how you want every single NBA franchise to build.
Right.
They didn't tank. They never tanked.
They just drafted superstars late. Yeah. I mean, okay.
They signed one and a half.
Yeah. I mean, look, they mined Sean Livingston. They did a great job of trading for Andre Iguodala and making him what they wanted him, you know, and building him into what they wanted to be. They did an amazing job of changing the entire perspective and landscape of the NBA with Steve Kerr and you know, Mark Jackson to a lesser extent, but basically building it around three-pointers. Like, give them credit, you know. If you want to blame anyone, blame LeBron for what he did when he went to Miami, because that's what started this whole thing.
Yeah, they made an incredibly smart move to purchase a second-round pick to get Jordan Bell. That team is just assembled really, really well. They didn't do anything wrong. They're not the bad guys. And honestly, I am thrilled he's in Golden State for two reasons. Let's say three reasons. One, I think it brings a more strong light to the fact that this system is really broken right now, and
hopefully we
can see that this be a precursor to changing it.
Apparently
his backup was if it wasn't the Warriors, he was going to sign with the Celtics, and that would have made me just furious.
Oh, God.
And three, this guarantees LeBron James never plays in the finals again, and that's fine with me.
I'm good with all three of those reasons. Totally. I'm totally with you. I love all three of those, and, you know, it's funny because, like, when this happened, it was kind of like, oh, man, of course, the season's over. But then my immediate next step, when I found out that no one offered him anything – or, like, anything reasonable, apparently, except for the Pelicans. I didn't know about that. But, you know, to me, when I saw the responses, Mark Spears wrote the article and, you know, on and on. And I just really felt good for him because I think that he totally took the power back. And he was basically like, look, this is how it's going to be. I'm going to build back my stock and screw you all for not believing that I could recover from this Achilles injury. And, you know, now you have to face the wrath of what we're about to do, which is, you know, probably set the record for wins. I mean, you got to think that Vegas sets that line at 73.5.
Probably. I mean, Boogie is going to miss at least half the season. Mm-hmm. But who knows? You know, he's going to be recovering from an Achilles, which is a pretty significant injury for a 6'11", 280-pound guy.
True.
The skill is there. He is obviously going to be a big contributor to that team. They're going to be able to let him take his time. He will not be rushed back into the lineup. He will be back when he's ready. No pressure situation for him. And you're right. There's this perception that Boogie Cousins is a bad guy. He's not. Boogie Cousins is a guy who gets excited when he plays basketball. He gets worked up. He yells. He screams. He does things he shouldn't in the course of a game, and that stuff happens. But off the court, he's a guy who's active in his community and has never been a problem.
Yep. Could not have said that any better. It's good for him, really. I really believe that.
And let's hope this is the change that the NBA so desperately needs.
Also true. Like, just to be clear, we're not, like, rooting on the fact that this happened. Like, it shouldn't have happened this way, and that's part of the good, because if he had gone anywhere else, like, this doesn't happen this way. Like, I think this is going to be a catalyst for change.
I think we all know that super teams are ruining the NBA, and there's got to be a way to fix that. There's no parity. There legitimately are, and, you know, I say this jokingly, but one team has a chance to win the championship this year. Barring some catastrophic happenstance, one team can win the championship. I think I'm going to give a little shout-out here to some Denise something who posted a comment on our Twitter feed that said the NBA might as well give the Warriors this year's NBA trophy when they give them last year's rings, game one of the season.
Yeah, that's a good shout out, Denise. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's hard to imagine. They would need two catastrophic injuries, I think, and I think that the Celtics would have to come together like in an incredible fashion. That is the only way I see them losing.
Right, or the Rockets trade for Anthony Davis or something like that.
Yeah, or the Lakers somehow get like Kawhi and Anthony Davis.
You know what's funny? I was having this conversation yesterday, and I was talking about the 76ers, and we were a 52-win team last year with two young superstars and the number one pick in the draft who hopefully is on the right track. Mm-hmm. If you were to add Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Davis to the 76ers roster today, for absolutely nothing in exchange, the Warriors would still be 10-point favorites.
No, I don't think so. But that would be a hell of a series, I'll tell you that much.
I think there's – do you disagree that they're still favorites?
No, I don't disagree with that. I think with DeMarcus Cousins healthy, it becomes a very interesting matchup. And that's adding two of the arguably the six best players in the NBA to one of the four best teams in the NBA. So,
yeah, no, and I love that Giannis came out and said that he would never go to LA. He wants no part of that culture.
That's
no,
my guy.
That super team thing. You gotta like Giannis. And your other guy starting a brawl in a FIBA game, maker, throwing flying elbows.
Oh my god!
Just in closing, because of this Warriors thing, there is no chance in hell I would give up anything more than I'm comfortable with to trade for Kawhi Leonard at this point.
Yeah, I mean, why would you? Because there's no guarantee he stays. There's no guarantee that him coming means anything more than your Eastern Conference favorites, probably. And, you know,
yeah,
the reality you're going to run right into the Warriors, and you need to wait and see what the Warriors are going to do after next season, which, again, I will say this, and we'll have lots of time to talk about it, but I think that this is it. I think this is a one and done. I think that Durant is gone. I think Durant is very possibly gone. I think that, you know, Draymond Green or Klay Thompson is gone. And then I think that Cousins is obviously going to try to parlay this into a max deal. So, you know, it won't be like this forever, but I'll tell you, for the next 340 days, it is going to be like this. It's Warriors world, and we're all just kind of living in it.
Well, for the next 7 days, this has been the Underdog, episode number 79. I've been Chris Horwardell. He's been on Shukana. And let's hope when we're back here next week, NBA free agency week two, even a fraction of as interesting as week one. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here real soon.